Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Culture members, this is another episode of The Culture is Money. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me on certain platforms as Leo Graham Prince, but whatever platforms that you know me on, I hope you know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, financial wealth, and financial building. I'm happy to have another episode for you guys. I've really lost count. I'm not sure what episode this is. I think we're in the teens. I haven't gotten to the 20s yet, but I think we're in the teens. But today's guest is like a really good friend. We went to college together, undergrad, before she went off to law school and everything. She saw me at probably my wildest, and that's saying something for those of you who follow me on Twitter. So I would like to introduce you guys to a good friend of mine from the University of Baltimore, Blessing.
Hi. Hey, Jamal.
So, Bless, let's catch up a little bit. How was law school? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so great. So basically, yes, we graduated together from University of Baltimore. And then from there, I went to Fordham University School of Law in New York. And law school is really great. Of course, it really opens your eyes to a lot of things. And in law school, I basically concentrated in business and financial law. So I'm, you know, my entire practice, everything that I do is just geared towards business law.
Okay, so after law school, did you do like, you know, normal people do after law school? Did you go to a big firm to practice first?
Yeah, so basically after law school, and I took the bar exam. So I failed the bar exam the first time, passed it the second time. And then from there, I worked for a boutique law firm, which we did corporate and securities work. And I mainly focused on helping tech industry companies obtain financing. From there, I now went to a big law firm, like top 7 in the country. And there I was advising financial institutions, so like banks, Wells Fargo, you know, fintech. So that's what I was doing until I, you know, started my own practice a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. Does anybody ever pass the bar the first time? I find like the brightest lawyers I've ever met always fail it at least once. Some of them twice.
people do pass the bar the first time. I mean, a lot of my friends passed the first time. The truth time is that the first time I did not take it seriously. I was like, it's summertime. I'm going to enjoy my summer and also study for the bar. And yeah, that caught up to me and I had to study for it for February.
Is it a humbling experience when you failed the bar?
It's very humbling because, you know, law school, and I don't, other lawyers may disagree, but at least my law school, they trained us and taught us how to be arrogant and how to, you know, really think highly of yourself. So when they expected everyone to pass the bar on the first try, like I went to Fordham, that's like top 30 in the country. They expect everyone to pass on the first try. And here I am like, oh, yeah, I'm a pass because I went to Fordham. And then I get the result and it's like, oh, pass. No, that didn't happen. I didn't pass.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So how was it advising like the fintech companies and the securities companies and that? I expect you probably dealt with some complex deals and that type of thing.
Yeah, it was really cool for us, especially because, like, you know, coming from where we come from, like, you know, I don't want to say I come from the bottom, but I'm from Brooklyn, I'm from New York, and you know, I have not seen that much money in my entire lifetime. And when you see all those zeros that is being exchanged because of products and services that's helping all of us, it's really like an eye opener. So it was really interesting, you know, working with all these tech companies that they have all these innovative ideas that's helping all of us regular folks, and they're making all this money. It was really cool. I've helped file a couple of IPOs. I've, you know, obtained like venture capital financing as well. So it was really interesting.
So you said something. What do you think Black-owned businesses lack in legal structure that mm-hmm. kind of prevents them from those public markets? Because, you know, you're on the corporate side of it in the legal aspect. I see it on the financial analyst side. Like, the money's there, but sometimes a lot of times the Black-owned businesses, they can't scale up to get to those deals, to, you know, get to the road shows, to get to the public financing? Like, what do you think the legal structure is that they're lacking?
I'm glad you asked that question, because a lot of times as attorneys, especially for small businesses and entrepreneurs, you know, we don't only offer legal advice. We also technically offer how you can scale your business. And I think in this sense, my first tip that I always give people is planning. Like, how are you planning your business? When people come to me and talk and tell me that they want to form their companies, or they think that they have this business idea, I always ask them, well, did you draft a business plan? Even if it's only for a 6-month business plan or 1 year, have you drafted a business plan? Because I think a lot of people, they say, oh yeah, I have this idea and I've seen other people do it, I'm going to do it too. But it takes a lot of work. And I think that if you don't plan, you will, like, 9 times out of 10, your business will fail. So I think that, you know, if you really want to scale up, especially Black businesses, we need to do the research. We need to plan. We need to figure out, you know, how can I get my business to be where I want it to be?
And are you saying that they don't have a business plan at all, or it's what do you call it? It's more ideation and no structure and no practicality to it.
It's I think the latter. Like, there's no structure, there's no practicality. Like, literally people will come to me and say, you know, I thought about this idea about how I can, like, you know, have a farm in Africa and then now sell those products. And I'm like, okay, have you done the research? You know, what's the plan? How do you plan on doing that? And a lot of people, they just, you know, I think social media has really, I guess, confused a lot of people when it comes to businesses, because, you know, we see all over Twitter, I just made 20K this month doing this. But a lot of people stay up at night. They research. They draft the plan. They have their goals. They know what they want to do. I think that the first thing that people should always do before even saying that I want to formalize my business is saying they should, you know, do the research, figure out how I'm going to do it. What are the downsides? What are the upsides? That's very important when you want to form a business, have a business, and actually scale your business to where you want it to go.
Do you find that a lot of the small businesses, do they not protect themselves from, one, lawsuits, and two, do they not protect their intellectual property? It's all great and good to come up with a great idea, come up with a, you know, innovative thought, and, you know, you share it with other people, but are they doing themselves a disservice by not putting in the funding to actually protect, you know, the things that they come up with?
Yeah, you're 100% right. I think that, so like after the business idea, after you draft the business plan, I think you definitely need to now formalize your business and figure out, you know, what type of entity do I want to do? From there, I always, like, at the same time that I'm forming your business, I'm also researching the trademarks. Like, let's say you want to, you know, have a specific unique name. I want to make sure that that trademark is available, because it's very important that you trademark your intellectual property. It's very important that you also protect yourself from lawsuits. But it's also difficult. And I say that because, you know, a lot of people that have mom and pop shops, they may not actually be formalized. Like, they actually just may have like a sole proprietorship where, you know, I just formed this business, and when I file taxes, it's my 1040 and a Schedule C, you know. So how do mom and pop shops that have not formed their business legally, how do they protect themselves from lawsuits? And I think that, you know, that gets a little complicated, because you now have to decide, okay, then maybe you do need to form a business. So what I will say is that, you know, if you are in a business or in an industry where you could potentially be sued, I would definitely form like a limited liability company where, you know, you're protected in terms of, you know, if someone wants to sue your company, they won't be able to touch your personal assets. However, you can still, you know, work around the past. Your taxes can still be passed through to you, and you can still work around with reducing your tax liability as well. But you also said something that was very important, and this may like be, I may like go off topic, but, you know, protecting your intellectual property is very, very important. You know, I don't know, a lot of people, they think it's a joke when it comes to, you know, having these unique ideas. And they go around telling other people, and then those people may actually steal it. I have a client right now that she created a skincare line, and she went to go and hire influencers to promote it. She didn't trademark it. She didn't protect herself. And now they have stolen her product, and they're now selling that, and they're making money off of it.
Wow. Like, and that's why I brought it up, because I think kind of what you were saying, people get caught up in the glamour, they get caught up in the glitz and all that of social media. And social media has its place in scaling your business, but they are all, but they're also very, you know, small details that need to be addressed. And you were talking about the trademark, and I think some, I've seen people get confused. They think because they formed an LLC or LLP that all of a sudden their logo is trademarked or their company name is trademarked. Can you kind of get into the difference between just forming a company and the difference between protecting, you know, names, slogans, and trademarks?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a big difference. I mean, literally, it's not even the same thing whatsoever. Because I can, like, for instance, right, my law firm, let's say that my law firm's name is Excellence Law. If I don't trademark that, like, I can form that business, meaning that the state government and the federal government knows that I, Blessing, has this business called Excellent Law. But let's say that there's someone in Virginia that also actually wants to name their law firm Excellent Law. They can do that in Virginia because that's a whole different state. So they can form a business in Virginia that is Excellent Law. And they can now, because I didn't trademark that name, they can also file a federal registration and take the same name that we both have and own the rights to that name. Meaning they can write me a cease and desist letter saying that because they own that name, I can no longer use it, even if I was using it before them, because they got to that place first. So I have an example. My uncle, he owns a lot of bakeries here, and somebody, like, he trademarked a name for his bakery and somebody stole it. However, he thought that he got the trademark rights first. No, what happened was he filed the application after the person that stole the name. And now that person owns the name. And they emailed me recently saying that we'll license the name to your uncle, even though it was my uncle's name first. And he thought that he put the registration in first. So it's really about, you know, first come and they get the name. So I can have the same name as someone in Virginia. And if I started my company first, if they filed the trademark for that name or that logo, it's theirs first. And there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, there's, of course, there's litigation, there's negotiation, but it's going to cost a lot of money in the long run.
And kind of go, and I want to kind of stay there for a second. Like, I've seen stuff where it's like, sometimes it's hard to trademark because you got to be kind of careful because you can't use general names in the English language, right? It's like, you can't just say, let's say you want to trademark good. Good is a common word. Like, no court's going to give you the rights to that and say no one else can use that, right?
Yeah, no, it has to be like something that's, I guess I want to say unique, but at the same time, mm-hmm. something that can be used, because you're right. There's some words that you can't trademark. However, I would say that there's a lot of funny stuff going on, because just this week, we just found out in the legal industry that I believe it was Marc Jacobs or Michael Kors, but I believe they were able to trademark the word the, T-H-E.
How do you trademark that?
I'm serious. They filed it, and I believe that it may have been approved. I don't want to be wrong, but I tweeted it out earlier this week. Like, that's crazy. Like, how is that even possible? Because people can't do that. You can't trademark the word the, but I guess so. So it's really about, you know, how you present your trademark application. But you're right. There are certain words that you cannot trademark. And also at the same time, too, the words that you do trademark, it really has to be something that, you know, can be used. Like, for instance, I think like McDonald's trademark, I think they trademark McDonald's French fries. Like, mm-hmm. those things are possible, but it's really about your business, you know, how you put your application together to prove that this, like, you have to trademark it because it's your unique, it comes with your unique package, basically.
Okay, let's kind of switch. I know, you know, there's always been, you know, this notion about, you know, legal fees being just so astronomically big and all that. And I'm sure that's why some, you know, small mom and pops or black owned businesses feel like they can't afford it and try to do this whole DIY, do it yourself, whereas I feel like law is kind of like, it's one of those specializations like medicines, like finance, like the one of those things that you can read some stuff, but you really can't, very few people can self-teach themselves everything in that specific field. So I want to kind of go into, like, are some of these businesses kind of doing themselves a disservice not seeking legal, you know, representation, and are the costs as astronomical as they think they are?
Okay, yeah. So I think that's a very good question. And I have this mug that says Google will never and can never replace my degree, because, you know, you can Google so much. There's just some there's just some things that an attorney can really help you with. And I think that it's very important that every Black owned business, small mom and pop shops, I think that they should always have a lawyer in their back pocket. One, because it will help you out in the long run. And two, because let's be honest, you know, Black people set the standard. We are the culture, and a lot of people will bite off this culture. We've seen it multiple times where a Black person has created something, and here comes, you know, someone else that's not part of this culture, take that same idea and make the profit off of it. So I do think that you should always have a lawyer in your back pocket, because one, there's so much that Google can tell you. Like, it can't tell you everything. And then two, there's this quote that my professor will always say, which is, a lawyer with a briefcase can steal more than 1,000 men with guns. I think he got that from The Godfather.
That's a bar, bro. That's a bar.
I think he got it from The Godfather, but he will always tell us, like, you know, when you get out there, you need to show them, show companies, show businesses that having a lawyer is very valuable to your business. It's very valuable, because think about this, Jamal. Can you imagine you own a restaurant, or you own, you know, a clothing store, and you hire all these employees, but you know nothing about labor laws? Because for any case, yeah, you pay them minimum wage, but there's also, at least in New York City, there's something called like wage and hour labor laws, where, you know, you have to meet a certain requirement in terms of how many sick days can that person get? How many paid sick days can that person get? You can't just say, oh yeah, I'm paying the minimum wage, and or I found out a way to just give them part-time so I don't have to pay benefits for them. You need a lawyer, because a lawyer will add value to your business, especially because litigation is costly. It's very costly. And the reason why, like the second question you asked was, you know, are these legal fees really expensive or really high? I would say that one law school is expensive. You know, degree was cost six figures. I'm gonna be honest. Law school is very expensive. So, and then two, a lot of people really do put craft into their, you know, legal profession. Like even for this podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, I know the law. Like I've been practicing, but I still do my research, because it's just valuable to give your client excellent service. That's one. You know, litigation too can be very costly, because, for instance, let's say with the trademark litigation, you want to prove that it's your name, it's your rights, you know, I own that name. I have to do a lot of research. I have to figure out, okay, how can I prove to the court? How can I prove that my client owns the right to this name or this logo? And of course, you know, you can look up precedent, but, you know, having a lawyer really it's really valuable to your business, because, you know, it can determine whether or not your business will fail. Especially in the beginning, because if you don't start right, if you don't have a good foundation, just forget about it. Your business is going to be rocky.
And I totally agree with you. And I only brought that up because I see, you know, you and I see some of the same stuff on social media, and people downplay. And I've run into it a little bit, like when altering consulting services, and people hit me up or they ask, you know, is that price on there for $200 an hour a price? Yes.
Yes. It is.
Because like you said, not only, you know, I went to college, I have student loans, but now I have in industry experience, and my knowledge is valuable. You're not just paying for a conversation. And like, if you didn't need me, you would have just Googled it. Obviously, yep. Google didn't help give you enough information. Obviously, all these gurus on Twitter who tweeting all this are not making it plain for you, or they're not giving you in depth. They've given you a course, they've given you some commercial, and you still don't get it. So you've come to me for my expertise. Now, the heck of it is probably you and I, like, our prices are well below industry standards, but I'm not going to go broke for y'all to try to get something free. And I think that's the mentality. And I always say this, like, with people in the culture, it's like, don't ruin your business trying to be cheap.
Yeah.
Some things you need to spend on, whether it's marketing or a CPA or a lawyer or a financial analyst, because if you get the right person who's not just trying to get you for a buck, they will add value to your business, and you'll make money tenfold off that.
I agree. That's the word. Honestly, that's the word. If you treat you like, people always think that, you know, them having a business is for themselves only, but it's not. If you have a good service, a good product, that's fine. But if you treat the back office are your lawyers, your accountants, your financial analysts, your budgeters. If you treat the back office with excellence, if you have a good back office, the front part will be so busy. You will have people running in and out.
That's very true. Now, now you just said you just started your own boutique law firm. We definitely congratulate you on that.
We're
gonna let you come on at the end, but I'm telling them right now, y'all better get blessed right now. You better, if you got a business, you better hire. Russ, can you only practice in New York, or can you practice other places?
So in terms of litigation, I can only practice in New York, but in terms of, like, you know, business formation, business legal advice, drafting a lot of contracts, I'm worldwide, baby.
Okay. Y'all heard it. She worldwide, baby. So get at it. So I know you did it sounds like you did a lot of variety in, you know, your corporate, you know, career and where you work. What is the boutique specifically going to focus on?
Yes. So I went to law school for one reason or one reason only, and that's to help my people. And when I say my people, I mean my people, the culture, you know, I'm here to help the culture's money, you know, multiply it. So, you know, I went to law school. People say, oh, you went to law school to do, you know, criminal law, or you went to law school to do civil. No, you know, there's people out there helping Black people when it comes to civil rights and all that stuff. No, I'm here to help Black people make their money and build generational wealth. So yes, my law firm focuses on small businesses, entrepreneurs, innovators, creators. I'm all that. And, you know, whether that's business litigation, whether that's business formation, whether that's drafting contracts, tax planning, estate planning, drafting your wills, that is me. Mm.
Like, so let's talk about something. I see a lot of a lot of, like, businesses sometimes say things on social media that, I don't know, I feel like opens them up for lawsuits for defamation, or just, you know, saying wild stuff that they really, you know, probably you really shouldn't say, like saying, I guarantee this and all that. Like, do you see a lot of that? Do you have to sometimes, when you're evaluating clients, like, slogans or public statements, do you have to kind of walk them back from saying stuff that opens them up for legal action?
Yes. Yeah. So, like, you know, especially, so for instance, right, let's say that you have a website, like your website, let's say when you have a website and you're telling people that you're a financial analyst and that you can help them with financial planning, you don't put on that website or in your Twitter feed that I guarantee positive results only. What you put is, this is just advertising, and that you should not expect similar outcomes as other people. Like, of course, you will formulate it in the legal terminology. But yes, you have to really, I always have to advise people, like, oh, don't say that, because if you say that, people are going to hold you to your word, and you can, and they can actually, you know, win. If they were to sue you and really prove their case, they can actually get some money from you, because there's just certain things you don't say, especially when it comes to services, not really product wise, because with products, if you're selling like lotion, of course, on the label design sticker, you're going to put warnings, like, warning, this has peanuts in it, you may be allergic. But when it comes to services, don't always guarantee the same, like, you cannot guarantee the same results, because everyone's situation is different. It's a case by case basis. So I will always say that when you're tweeting, when you have websites, be careful how you present yourself. Yeah, you can be positive, but also, this is a business, and you cannot get sued because you want to say, you want to bring customers by telling them, you're the best, I'm the greatest. Everyone that I worked with, they make over 100K within 2 years. You can't say that. You know, just say, this is case by case. Similar results may vary. That's it.
Nice, nice. So, in your opinion, does the court who has the advantage in court? Is it the big corporations, the little corporations? Is it really case by case? It depends on the situation. How does that work?
I'm going to give you the legal term that every attorney says to every single person when they ask questions like this. And my answer is going to be, it depends. Why it depends? Because one, I'm in New York State. So New York may be different from Delaware, and it really is. You know, who gets favored is really about how good your attorney is and precedent, or whether you're going to set the new precedent. What I would say, though, is, you know, a lot of people, you know, I wouldn't say it's mom and pop shops, but a lot of corporations, the reason why they form in Delaware is because courts favor them. You know, Delaware corporate law is like top. It's like the icing on the cake in America, you know. And then you have Wyoming and New York. New York is getting up there as well in terms of like commercial law, corporate law. What I would say though is that if you have if you visualize your business being really great, and when I say great, I mean like Facebook type of thing, like McDonald's type of thing, then you can form in Delaware because courts in Delaware favor corporations. That's what I would say.
So are you saying like, say, you know, Vito's Industries, blah, 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 5 years from now, I get sued, but I formed in Delaware. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that anyone who sues me has to sue me in Delaware, or that's where the case is going to be brought up?
No. Yeah, no, that's different. So because now you're getting into like civil procedure, and we can talk about that off, but like that's different because with civil procedure, you know, there's diversity jurisdiction. So it's definitely going to be in federal court, and it really depends. So that's different. What I mean though, is that like, let's say you, the corporation, you want to sue somebody, you can bring them to the Delaware court because Delaware courts favor you. And so when it comes to like litigation and there's something called civil procedure, which is a whole separate type of law where, you know, they where the litigation should happen. That's different. But yes,
okay.
I mean, though, in terms of like a lot of reasons why corporations and people who also want to have venture capital financing, a lot of reasons why they're advised to form in Delaware is because investors favor it, corporations favor it, and the courts favor them as well.
Okay. Let's kind of get into an estate planning type of thing. A little bit of a touchy thing. You know, I like always to be a little controversial. Do you advise your clients who have businesses, would you advise them, is a prenup a thing they should have?
Oh Lord.
If I got a business, again, Vito's Industries, whatever, you've been my lawyer for the next 5 years. I'm about to get married. Bless. Hey, I'm about to get married. What do you think I should do in regards to the business? Should I get married and prenup be damned, but I leave I own 51% of the business and the marriage ends? So now when it ends, depending on which state you're in, now it's all community property. Now I've left my corporation open to being tied up because technically the 51% is tied up in court until the judge decides. Like, is that something you, is that type of thing something you would advise a client on in regards to succession planning, estate planning, that type of thing?
Oh man, Jamal, prenups, you know. Yes, that's very controversial because personal point of view, I'm a female. I'm not signing nobody's prenup. That's one.
You a lawyer, it's different.
You know, but legally, you know, honestly speaking, if they were not shooting with you in the gym, better make them sign them prenups. That's what I would say. But let me tell you something that's crazy. You know The Rock, right? Dwayne Johnson.
Yes.
He was married to his first wife, I believe, 1990-something, like 1999. You know, he was a wrestler. He was broke. Not broke, but he was a wrestler. I just found out a couple of weeks ago that after they divorced, and I don't know the entire, like, agreement, divorce agreement, but I found out that after they divorced, they found together, they opened up his production company. So basically, everything he owns, she has a percentage of it as well, including the football team or company he just bought.
Wow.
So I found that very intriguing, but, you know, my advice really, truthfully, honestly, is that if you have a very successful business before you're married and that person was literally not shooting with you in the gym, you need to sign the prenups. And if you don't want to do that, then you need, if you have a corporation or even if you have an LLC, make that person a member or a shareholder. That way, when things do hit the fan, they can't argue and say they're broke because they also have percentage in that same company.
What? Bless you. You just schooled me. I've never thought about that angle. I've thought about, you know, I'm strategic. You know, I've been thinking about prenups forever.
Oh my God.
Thought about Swiss bank accounts, Cayman Islands, all that. Like, you know, I study finance so I could literally hide money. And if the U.S. government only has jurisdiction over U.S. assets,
well, that's how I feel about it. I did not hear that.
Oh, you ain't here. You ain't my lawyer yet. I give you a dollar. But I've never heard making the spouse a member so that you cannot say they were broke. And, you know, legally, I hear what you're saying because that's always the precedent. Because the law literally says that if you have gotten a spouse to a lifestyle that they've grown accustomed to, you have to maintain that in the even in the event of a divorce. I mean, that's why a lot of men get screwed, because they're the primary breadwinner. You took her from the mud to the palace, and now you try to divorce her and leave her with nothing. The court ain't having it.
I think we're going to be better off than the people before us, because look at Dr. Dre, yo. Like, that thing is just intriguing to me. First, she's asking for $900,000 for entertainment every month. Now she's talking about she has a right to his name, Dr. Dre.
What the hell?
It's crazy to me. And the thing about it is not, like, I'm getting off topic legally, but I'm just trying to figure out, what were you doing since 1980-something when he became Dr. Dre? You telling me you was just living the life? You didn't have no paper? You didn't have no bag for yourself? Because even if there's no prenup, even if there is a prenup, always get the bag while you're married. That way, if you get screwed at the divorce court hearing, you still got something of your own.
Yeah, and I think people always think, because I'm a man, I'm always worried about, in the prenup aspect, it's always... Jamal's worried about the men. True, I am worried about men, but I worry about women who open themselves up to, all right, blessing, you got a legal firm. You marry a dude who maybe he's a mechanic. Mm. Y'all get married 5-10 years down the line, you divorce. You've made partnered and built this firm up to $20 million. Now all of a sudden you have to split that with him because the marriage ended. I ain't with it.
It's crazy because, so, like, personally, I don't do family law, and there's a lot of reasons to it, like, in terms of, like, my Christian lifestyle. But when I was studying for the bar, we had to study family law, and I was just pissed off. I'm like, nah, that's crazy. I'm not giving nobody that money. That's crazy. But the law is the law.
It is.
I mean, it's really sad.
So what I was saying in the forms of estate planning, in the federal, I see a lot of, again, culture businesses that don't survive the transition from inception to second generational wealth.
Nope.
Because there is no estate planning. The kids start fighting over who gets what, like, or who gets this percentage. Say I have a company and I got my daughter right now, but I have another child or a couple of kids. Mm-hmm. I die without leaving a will. Who gets what or whatever, and I own 100% of the company. Technically, every child is entitled to a piece, to say nothing of a spouse and all that. And do you find yourself having to tell companies that they need to make a succession plan?
Yes, Black people, the culture's money needs to be passed down from generation to generation equally and fairly. Yes, Jamal, let me tell you something. It's very important as a person that, whether you're working 9-to-5, whether you have your own business, whether you have a couple of real estate buildings or houses, that they have an estate plan, like, down packed in the back of their pockets. Someone knows where to get it just in case something happens. And I say that because, you know, one, you know, you don't want to pass away and then you destroy your family because you didn't have that will, or you didn't have that life insurance, or you didn't have a way for your business to be passed down. I think it's very important that even if you don't talk about it in the beginning of your business, that the minute, the second that you see how profitable this business is becoming, you have a plan in terms of how the business will continue to grow when you're not here on this earth. Because there's a big difference between business succession planning and then your personal life estate planning. You know, you need to know what happens if, God forbid, I can no longer operate this business, but I'm still on this earth. How can my business move forward? Or now what happens if I am no longer on this earth? How can my business move forward? Because sometimes too, you know, families don't always have to inherit your business. And that's just the truth. You know, you can sell your business and make more money off of that. You know, so I think it's very important that people figure out some timeline, whether it's beginning, it's the middle, but at least figure out within the first couple of years, I say the first 2 years, how this business can move forward when I'm no longer here.
Bless, this has been a good conversation. I think they really needed this. Like, I've done, you know, investing, I've done entrepreneurship, I've done transition from one business to the next, but no one's been on to talk about the legal aspects. And this has been like fire. Like, you've given them so much gems, so much information. Do two things for me. One, give them one last word of, like, professional legal advice that you think they all should know, something that you should have?
Yes, yes. Business. My advice to every single person is that, you know, we could all talk the talk and say Black business, the culture's money, support this, but we're not supporting low quality. We're not supporting bad quality. If you really want people to support the culture's money, if you really want people to support your business, your entrepreneurial services, then from the beginning, plan so that you can succeed and have a solid foundation, because a rocky foundation will cause your business to fail no matter what. You can build it on the sand, you can build it on anything, but if it's not on concrete, it's going to fail.
Like she said, she only does litigation in New York, but as far as legal papers, formations, all that, she global, baby. She'll hit it up and get that $100 off.
Yeah.
This has been definitely a great episode of Coaching Money.
I gotta boost you up because I'm really proud of you, Jamal. Like, seriously. Because I know you. No, seriously. And the crazy part is, Jamal, you always trending. Like, even my sisters would be like, oh, look what this guy said. I'm like, I went to school with that guy. I know him. But no, I'm really proud of you, Jamal. I just want to say that.
You know I love you, Bless. Yes. Yo, it's always the ratchet stuff. They never trend me for the financial.
Can you imagine? Like, come on, guys. Stop doing that.
Yo, but I definitely love Bless, and I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, her business growing and all that. She already my lawyer. She don't even know. As soon as I got some things coming up, and if anybody's going to get my money, it's going to be my friend. So,
thank you.
We definitely appreciate that and all that. So this has been another great episode of The Culture of Money. I'll talk to you guys soon, and definitely check Blessing out. See you guys out.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.